And so then Bobby and Tressa were willing and are willing to share these things with you. I really believe they will bless your marriage. They will bless you as you help other people with their marriages. This is being recorded right now as well, so that maybe we can give the recording to people to help them listen to, because I'm just so grateful, because it's really good stuff that they're going to share. So let me lead us in a word of prayer, and I'll turn things over to Bobby and Tressa Gibbs. Actually, Jason Henderson, before you pray, I was going to have Jason Henderson come up and pray. He, along with his wife Alex, are in charge of our marriage ministry, and I just about forgot to do that. So let's give Jason a hand, everybody.
Thanks, Bobby. All right, thank you guys for being here, and thank you guys in advance. Let's pray. God, thank you for this evening. Thank you for Christians that have the courage to follow in your example, to disciple others by passing along your wisdom. God, we know that every moment, every breath we breathe is just another step in your unfolding plan for each of us. And you have us here tonight as part of that plan, God. I pray that we would come with ears that are ready to listen, with a fertile mind. This is church, and Bobby and Tressa are your hands and feet, and tonight they're going to be your mouthpiece. God, would you use them? We're gonna hear your wisdom on marriage, and I hope that everybody here can take home something tonight that they can put into action, and that they can trust and follow you in their marriage better. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Thank you, Jason. Let me first say, real quick, thank you to everybody. And sometime tonight, you should look at your spouse and say thank you. Thank you for investing in your marriage and just taking a little bit of time out of your day today to be with us. Our hope and prayer is that we can share a little bit about our experience and our struggles, some things that we've done wrong, some things we've done right. And, you know, hopefully we have really good marriages in here, but the facts are that, you know, there's some marriages in this room that may not be in a good place. So hopefully we can share something that sparks a conversation or, you know, lead you in a different direction. So, again, thank you for being here. Real quick, we want to be real. We want to be transparent. We don't have all the answers, but we do have some life experiences, and we just want to share those with you. So, I'm turning.
You want to put a picture of our family? Is
it? Yes.
Yeah.
So, I'm Bobby and Tressa Gibbs. We've been married for almost 13 years, coming up in May. We have two children. They're just blessings to us. We've got Ellie. She's 10 years old. She's in the fourth grade. Ty is 8 years old. He is in the second grade. We've been at Harpeth for 5 years now.
Yeah, we were. We actually came to Harpeth when we first were engaged, I think, and first married 10 or 12 years ago, I guess, when we were meeting at the school. And so we went for a while, and then we kind of went a different direction, and we've been back here now for 5 years, and it's definitely our home. Yeah.
I work here in Franklin at Community Health Systems, a healthcare company.
Yeah, and I, like Bobby mentioned, I'm a marriage counselor, and thank you for what Bobby said about me. That means a lot. But I'm just passionate about helping marriages, and that's kind of where I've kind of developed my niche in counseling, and just love helping couples get back on track, helping those that are in a hard spot, and feel real passionate about it. So we're excited that we get to do this together. He hears all about what I do, and I talk a lot about it, and so to have him here with me and doing this together is fun. Tonight we're going to talk about intimacy, and there's a couple different kinds of intimacy, but I want to first just explain what we think it is, kind of a definition of intimacy, because that's a pretty vague word that people throw around, and it's kind of broad, and I think a lot of people just immediately think sex, but we think it means a lot more than that. So we wrote this as kind of what we think intimacy is. We said intimacy is not just what happens in the bedroom. It means fostering a warm and safe atmosphere that makes it easy to share your fears, your desires, your needs, your dreams, and your longings. To the next slide, there's two types of intimacy that we've basically identified. Turn the next slide for us. Yep.
There we go.
Okay, and I'm going to get better at maybe watching it. I don't know. It's not really clear up there either, so we'll figure it out. So the two types of intimacy that we really think are important are emotional intimacy and physical intimacy. And we think they go together. They really feed off of each other, and it's hard to have one without the other. It's kind of like a cycle, like that picture of a cycle. The more emotional intimacy you have and closeness, typically the more physical intimacy you can have, which then, of course, leads to more emotional intimacy. But like any cycle, it also can have the opposite effect, kind of the negative cycle of we're not physically connecting, so we really can't be close emotionally, and so there we don't have more physical intimacy, and you kind of know where that goes. But we think they're both really important, actually essential parts of marriage. We think that having a good sex life and being intimate physically is a huge part of having a great marriage. And typically, men understand the physical intimacy part better. Let's go back. We'll work through it. So stay there for a minute. It's typically harder for men to have that emotional intimacy, and women tend to have it more natural, the emotional part. And I think that you've watched little girls on the playground. I mean, our daughter, 10, she comes home from school, and at recess, she plays house and family and school in ways that's real relational. That's kind of how women are more wired. But sometimes women aren't as wired to understand this physical need. But I do think it's important that we say not everybody's like that. That's the majority, and that's kind of our experience, but that's not everybody. There's some books that we'll refer to several times in this talk, but they're by Sean T. Feldhahn, and she spoke to Harpeth last year. Probably a lot of you heard her, but she's extremely big onto research. She really did surveyed tons of people and really got the statistics on this, and it came out that about 75% of couples kind of fall into this category. And then, of course, there's 25% that it's maybe opposite, that your roles are completely reversed. So we know there's couples in here that are going to say, we're the exact opposite, and that's okay. Like, I hope you still feel like there's things that you can apply and that work for you, really, at whatever stage that you're in.
And another way we talk about relationships, the trajectory of relationships, is we explain it. So you have these two people in a relationship. And at any given time, you're either growing closer together or you're growing farther apart. If you're a couple and you think, oh, we're just, you know, staying steady, chances are you're growing farther apart. So that's helped us. That analogy has helped us because over any given week or weekend, we will...
Or day, right.
We will, be heading in the right direction, growing toward each other. All it takes is a comment or a look or a sigh or something that knocks us off course, and there we go. We're heading in opposite directions, and then we have to figure out, okay, what do we have to do? And is it, me taking my ego or my pride and setting it aside and apologizing, just talking it out? And a lot of times, even though it was something easy that got us off course, it can be something easy like an apology or just a simple "I love you" that can get us back on course, growing, back toward each other. So.
Yeah, and we kind of, as we started talking and really remembering back and reflecting back on our marriage, we realized that we spent the first half of our marriage, so the first 5 or 6 years of our marriage, kind of slowly on that trajectory of drifting apart. We didn't really understand intimacy. We certainly didn't have true intimacy. And so we kind of feel like we would eventually have ended up apart if we weren't, really aware of this. Bobby will admit and he'll share that he didn't know how to be emotionally available for me. As most men don't, he didn't know what I was needing when I said, I want to talk. I want to know what you're feeling. Let's, share with me. I mean, it was kind of torture for him because he didn't even know what that meant. And then I, on the other hand, didn't understand his need for sex. I literally just thought he has this huge need. He wants it a lot, but I had no idea what that was about. And I think that's extremely common for, especially maybe when you're married and raised in a Christian home. I was taught all about how not to have sex and how to be pure and wait for marriage, but really not a lot about once you're married, then how do you meet this need? And I really didn't feel like I could even talk to anybody about it. Even my closest friends, we didn't maybe joked about it, but we didn't really talk about it. Didn't feel like I could talk to my mom. I mean, it just wasn't something that was really available for me. So we were kind of left not understanding each other and kind of realizing that we weren't close. And we'll share, but it ended up taking us really digging in. We were in marriage counseling, and we'll share more about that, but to get to a place of really understanding this, and we're still on that journey. We still don't have it figured out. We still feel like we read a lot, and we talk a lot about this, and we've loved Harpeth putting on the marriage events. That's been huge for us, is just having these events where we get to go and really learn more and dig into this stuff even deeper. So we're still learning about the process. Yeah. But what you're going to hear this afternoon is we're each going to give 3 points. Bobby, kind of from the man perspective and especially regarding how to be emotionally available. And then I'm going to share 3 points. We're going to go back and forth. But I'm going to share 3 points about how, for the women, maybe to be more physically intimate. And our hope is that wherever you are, whatever stage you're at, that something here will strike you and it'll be a take home and a help to your marriage.
And, you know, let me say, it's tough. It's, you know, it's scary to get up here and talk about, you know, personal stuff. But we believe, because we're passionate about marriages, that it's what needs to be done. And we need to start the conversation. And we need to make sure that we're pouring into marriages and lifting each other up. Next slide. So the first part for men that we're going to talk about real quick is taking the emotional armor off. So when you talk about emotional armor, you've got to look at, you know, what is emotional armor? And it's a form of self-protection. You can think of it as a wall. You can think of it as a shield or literally a suit of armor that you put on. And at some level, we all put on some emotional armor every day. I believe there are two types of emotional armor. There's healthy emotional armor that's, you know, more situational. Like if you are going to go into a board meeting or a meeting with your boss or a sports situation, there's that situational, healthy emotional armor that you put on yourself so that you can perform at whatever level you need to. The other kind, the unhealthy kind, is that's what we tend to just live in. And that emotional armor is to keep us from getting hurt from those that we love the most. You know, we think that, you know, we think that if this person that I love really knew us or, you know, really knew our thoughts or what we've done in our past, that they wouldn't love us or they would leave us and that would be painful. So, you know, we pack on the emotional armor, which, you know, greatly limits us in our relationships. As Tressa said, our first 5 years of marriage, I feel like we were drifting apart. You know, backing up before we were married, I wasn't a very good person. I lived a pretty wild and cultural lifestyle that I'm not proud of, but, you know, I own it. And I brought that into the marriage, but I hid it behind this emotional armor. And because I knew that if Tressa knew who I really was, she'd be gone, and that would hurt. And so about the 5-year point of our marriage, we had some struggles that we dealt with, and there were some things that happened in our family that really brought me to this crossroads of life. That's what I refer to it as, is this crossroads of life. And I knew a good friend that had been through a similar scenario, and so I called him up, and he comes and picks me up, and we're driving around in the car, and I'm able to just share all my struggles and all my fears and all my scars and just all my junk that I've been carrying around for years. And this is how he laid it out for me. He said, Bobby, you have a decision to make, and you can make the right decision and deal with all this pain and all this garbage that you've been carrying around, and it's going to be the best thing you've done for your life, and it's the best thing that you've done for your marriage. Or you can decide, you know, not to deal with it, and you might as well throw it in a box, put a bow on it, and hand it to your kids, because that's what's going to happen, is you're just going to pass that down to them. So when he put it in those terms, if you know me, I'm all about my family, and I wasn't going to do that. So I found myself having to man up, and literally about 4 hours later, I was in marriage counseling.
We didn't waste any time.
Yeah, so... He actually dropped me off at the marriage counselor. So we're sitting here talking to this marriage counselor, and over the next few weeks, this marriage counselor is able to lure me out of my emotional armor. And for the first time I know in my adult life, and maybe for the first time in a long, long time, I was able to be 100% real. And let me tell you, it felt like a pair of shoulder pads being... lifted off of me. And yes, I was scared to death I was actually convinced that Tressa was going to leave. But she didn't leave. You know, she walked that journey with me. She cried with me. You know, she provided a safe place. And, you know, we're standing up here today.
Yeah, and it's even hearing him say that, it surprises me that he would have thought in that moment. You know, and I think that's what shame will deceive you. It will tell you, if you share this, you know, worst case, they will leave, they will hurt you, they will think these things about you. And I never, I mean, that wouldn't even cross my mind to leave, but I remember thinking, wow, I'm finally seeing him. Like, these are the things I've wanted to know about, because I knew there were things. I knew there was some walls between us, and I didn't know what it was about. And so it was, I mean, it still is like some of the best memories of mine, those weeks of just him pouring out his soul and sharing. And it was tough. I mean, I'm not saying it was all good. It was hard. There were things that, fear that was triggered in me and doubt and questions, but it was definitely like, okay, we can deal with this. I see who you are. You've let the armor down. It was wonderful. It was really a place of actual intimacy for us that we had not ever had before. Yeah.
So back on the emotional armor, where do we get this emotional armor? Obviously, we get it from our past, and you know, we probably pick it up from our parents. Quick little story of how it's just, you know, we gravitate. I gravitate back toward that. But a couple of weeks ago, my son Ty plays basketball, and he loses a heartbreaker, man. You know, last couple of seconds, guy hits a shot, loses by two. Ty's crying. I feel like crying. It's 8-year-old basketball. It's a big deal. but, of course, I strap on the emotional armor. I'm like, hey, it didn't happen. We're going to suck it up. Move on. So we're back at the house, and he's following me around the house, and I look back at him, and he's got these tears in his eyes. And I realized that I was showing him emotional armor, something that's caused me so much pain and grief, and I'm showing him that. And so I sit right there on the floor, and I put this little 8-year-old boy in my lap, and I said, son, tell me how you feel. You know, I'm sure that hurt. You know, everything I learned in marriage counseling, I just broke it out. And he looked up at me and he said, Dad, I just don't want you to be disappointed in me. And how awesome is that, you know? I mean, how cool would it be if sometimes when we're struggling, if we could just look at our spouse and say, you know what, I just don't want to let you down. I don't want to disappoint you. And to get that comfort. And I was able to say, son, you don't disappoint me. I'm so proud of you. And, you know, we need to hear that not only, you know, from an 8-year-old boy to his dad, but from, you know, husband and wife and wife to husband. You know, other places we get it, our culture gives it to us. You know, I got it from sports playing up, just growing up playing sports. And we also get it from our present day, where we are today. These expectations that are placed upon us, we got to have a level of emotional armor to really, you know, walk through that. We get it from our shame that we carry around. We also get it from rejection, and this is including rejection in the bedroom. And even, and for wives, and maybe the roles are reversed, again, like Tressa was talking about, but for the wives, you know, perhaps they approach their husbands for some emotional intimacy and their husbands aren't available. It's only a matter of time till she develops some emotional armor, because that hurts, that rejection hurts. So how does our emotional armor affect us? I think the biggest way is it limits the depths of our relationships. Obviously, most importantly, with our spouse, our friends, even God. It robs our spouse from being fulfilled in the marriage. It prevents us from meeting our spouse's needs. And, you know, yes, you know, having this armor on, and this is why I wore it, you know, it limits the potential for us to get hurt. But here's what I've learned, and this is 100% true. It keeps us from experiencing the joys and full potentials of our relationships. So the last point up there, unzip your soul. So those weeks of marriage counseling that we were in, this marriage counselor, she painted this picture for me, and it made a lot of sense. So I've got this basket, and you know, I'm sure everybody's got this basket that you take this ugly stuff about you, and you stuff it in the basket, and you put the lid on it. And so if it's in the basket and the lid's on it, then you can't see it, and it's out of sight, and it's out of mind, and you don't have to deal with it because it doesn't exist. My problem was the basket got full. The top didn't fit on the basket anymore. Therefore, I had to tip the basket over and pour it all out on the table. You know, I would encourage that if you've got that basket, and hopefully your basket's not near as big as mine was, but If you've got that basket, you know, discuss your fears. Talk about your fears. Talk about your struggles. Talk about your dreams. Talk about your feelings. Talk about your emotions. That will take you on a you know, more intimate level with your spouse. For men, for most men, it doesn't come natural. It's tough. I'll be honest, what I had to do was I had to fake it. I had to follow the fake it till you make it rule. I had to take baby steps. But I can tell you it's worth it. It's rewarding, you know, both inside and outside the bedroom. So.
All right, so for the women, the second Next. Part kind of goes along with the emotional armor, but being that safe place, so your husband, and this goes for either side, but being that safe place for your spouse to share and to take off that armor and to let down that wall. If he starts to let down the wall a little bit and maybe hand you a brick or see how you're going to handle it, you know, show you the vulnerabilities, you got to be a safe place. You can't use that brick against them and then hurt them worse or throw it back at them. So that's a really hard thing, but I think it's an important thing. Because the reality is, if you're not safe, it doesn't mean the struggles go away. It just means they don't talk about their struggles. They're still there. So it's really important, and I know it's hard. I mean, it's hard to be safe for your partner. And what I think safe means, it's being non-judgmental, being forgiving. I loved last week Tony DePriest's sermon on showing grace to your spouse, because that's a huge part of this, is being forgiving and being loving towards them when they've messed up, when they haven't been what you needed them to be. And I, in counseling, I see so many couples that are several years down and layers of pain away from this when a partner will say, you know what, I tried to share this. I remembered the time, the exact day when I tried to talk about this struggle, and I got the message from my spouse, don't share that. I can't handle it. I'll leave. I'll freak out. And I get that. I understand why that spouse would feel that way. But what happens is then that partner says, never again. I'll never share that struggle again because it's not safe. So I, you know, I want to tell people before they get to that point, be safe if you can. This to me, I saw this on a TV show. I don't know if y'all watch Parenthood this past season. I know some of the women in here did. But I watch all TV shows kind of as a marriage counselor, so I'm watching for these things all the time. But there was a moment in Parenthood where one of the main guys, Crosby, his business was failing. The studio that he'd been working on was going under, and he was dealing with this and all this, you know, fear and shame around it. And so he finally is going to talk to his wife about it. And you can tell it's exactly opposite of what he wants to do. And he shares it. And I thought, okay, it's going to be interesting to see what Jasmine does. Is she going to be there for him, or is she going to shame him? And it was beautiful because in that moment, she was there for him. I mean, she hugged him. They cried together. They talked about it. And you could just see in his face, it was a totally different experience because he learned it was safe. But it is scary. And we had a situation, I'd say a year ago, where we really had this opportunity for Bobby to let down the armor or to keep it up. And we'll tell you a little bit about it. We were, Shanti, when she came here to speak last year, we mentioned about the books. We loved her talk, and we went home and got the books, and we started really digging into this stuff. And there were, we would each read a chapter, and then we would talk about it. And there was one of the chapters for the women part, and it was talking about how men have this battle that they struggle with all the time, that they're visual and that they're constantly seeing images that make it hard to stay pure in their thoughts. The reality is culture has capitalized on this, and they put commercials, and there's always women dressed, you know, in these ways, and so it's just a constant battle. And I think I had known that this was a battle and that men are visual, but I don't think I knew how big it was until I read this chapter. So when I read the chapter, then I'm talking to Bobby, and I'm, you know, so I'm like, is this something you struggle with? Is this real? You know, is this a battle that you face? In that moment, it was one of those moments he had the choice to share.
Yeah, so everything inside me wanted to slap the emotional armor back on and pretty much lie and throw all you guys under the bus, but not me. I mean, all these guys think that, but not me. But, you know, for some reason, I manned up, and I said, you know what, that is me. And that's a lot of men that I know. And it's a battle. It's a struggle. And, you know, I went back to that place of shame and that place of fear, like, well, she might just tell me to stop the car, and she just jumps out because she's going to leave me. And, you know, her response was, you know, thank you for being honest. Thank you for sharing, and I want to help you with that struggle.
Yeah, and it's been one of those times where when he let his guard down, then it really, again, it took us to that next level of, I can help you with this struggle. I can pray about it with you. I can, you know, be aware and not make it so awkward. If we see a girl in the store, we'll almost like laugh about it in the car, like, yeah, you saw her, I saw her. You know, and it's like we're in it together. I'm here fighting the battle with him versus leaving him alone, you know, trying to act like he's got it all together.
All right, next slide, please. Okay, men, number two, here we go. Learn your wife, make her your girlfriend. So learn your wife. Josh Turner, the country music singer, wrote a book about a year ago called Man Stuff. And there's this section of the book, he's talking about his marriage. And he has this quote, I love this quote. He says, "Husbands, don't claim to love your wife if you are not willing to learn her." That's pretty powerful. You know, we do need to put forth an effort to learn our wives. And we have to understand that it's a process. It's not a one-time thing. It's not studying for an exam. It's an ongoing process that we have to be intentional about. Learning your wife, you have to learn her love language. Figure it out. Like Tressa shared, the first 5 years of our marriage, I was trying to show Tressa that I loved her through a love language that I understood. But I never did consider a love language. I didn't even know what love languages were, but I didn't consider, you know, how she was receiving that. And so for 5 years, she didn't get anything from me. I didn't meet any emotional needs. So learn your spouse's love language. You know, one of the things about learning your wife and making her your girlfriend, for me, it was about time. And we hear a lot about quality time. What I realized at that point in our lives was it requires quantity as well. And I had worked myself into a job that wasn't very friendly to marriages, much less families. And so I had to make a change at that. You know, I believe that quality time is good, but it takes the quantity to get the quality. Make sure she knows you love her every day. Make sure she knows you would choose her all over again. Sean T says this is a really big thing for women. You know, most women will want to be reassured several times a day of, "Hey, is our relationship okay? Do you still love me? Would you choose me again? Are we in a good place?" And the more times you can answer that question, the better off your relationship is going to be. Compliment your spouse in front of others. We know that, you know, one good sign of how healthy or unhealthy a marriage is what spouses say about each other in front of other people. Maybe you've been around folks that they build their spouse up. They say something good about them. Chances are that's a good marriage. But I'm sure we've all been around couples that are critical of their spouse or put their spouse down, and chances are that marriage is in a bad place. So build your spouse up. It makes me feel great when Tressa says something positive about me in front of other people. Let's go to the next slide real quick. I'm sorry. All right, who's seen this? Has everybody seen this? I saw this yesterday. All right, so wait. All right, so perception is everything.
If you haven't seen this, it's gonna blow your mind.
Yeah. So
it's crazy.
So raise your hand if you see a blue and black dress on the screen. All right, raise your hand if you see a white and gold.
Not as many of us.
Is that crazy? You see what?
White and gold on your phone.
Blue and gold? I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, some people say blue and brown.
Okay, do we have any spouses Jason that see opposite? Up. Back here? Workman's? Not yet.
Maybe on the screen it's a little more of the blue and black, but still white and gold for me, right, Mandy? It's totally white and gold.
All right, so perception is everything. Let's go to the next slide. All right, so... All right, so perception.
Some of you are still a little confused, right?
Yeah. We saw opposite.
And our kids, we were trying to. Our daughter saw what I saw, and our son saw what he saw. We were like, this is so strange. And it's, like, so clear
to
us.
And, you know. No, we didn't fight about that. We could have. So perception is everything. So let me give you a scenario here, a common scenario that kind of goes along with that perception. So let's say that a husband gets up and he puts the emotional armor on and he goes off to work. And so I've got this emotional armor on and I'm at work and I'm giving work everything that I can. And I'm showing my wife that I love her because I'm providing this lifestyle. I'm providing this security, this financial security. And I'm giving everything that I've got. I'm pouring everything that I've got into work. At the same time, the wife is, you know, at her job or with the kids or at home or whatever, and she's looking at that exact same scenario thinking, he must love his job more than me because I haven't heard from him, and that's where he's all of his energy and efforts and emotions are, so he loves his job more than me. It's the same scenario. I mean, and you know, I've been there. I know a lot of men that are there. We have the right intentions, but we have to consider what the viewpoint is from our spouse. And so, you know, just checking in with your spouse, like I said earlier, throughout the day, let your spouse know that, hey, we're okay, we're in a good place.
Yeah, and that's a huge way. When he'll just send me the smallest little text or just a quick little thinking of you, it helps me throughout the day to feel like we're close. You know, there's not this huge division when he comes home. I mean, we're already kind of emotionally on the same page and we feel like we're working together. So that's a huge tip that that's been helpful for us. Okay, so for the women, number two, I want to share that how important it is. This was one of the hugest mind-blowing myths that I learned in our marriage, was that sex is not just physical for men. I really felt like, I mean, definitely the first 5 or 6 years of marriage, I had no idea. I just thought this was a huge physical need he had, an insatiable physical need he had that I could never really meet. And I didn't understand how important it was. What I've learned is huge, is it is so much more important than just physical to men. It's actually this huge emotional need. It's a way that they want to know that their wife desires them, wants them, respects them. And a lot of times it's one of the top ways that women can show men that they love them. So when a man feels that his wife desires him, it really changes everything in his world. I don't know if y'all remember, there was a commercial several years ago, a Viagra commercial, that talked about, it shows this man, and obviously he's had good sex that morning, but he's going throughout his day, and everywhere he goes, people say, something's different about you. Like, what's different? What's going on? Did you get a new haircut, or is there a promotion? And he just kind of has this smile, like, you know. And every man, I think, knows that. They know when their wife wants them, when their wife desires them, it changes everything for them. I mean, they can go out into the world and conquer anything. It really is, it's a pretty powerful thing. But when I forget this and when I think that sex is just a physical need for Bobby, I kind of think, well, it's not that important. I minimize it. It's, you know, it's just a little side need that he has. Like, I might need to exercise, but I certainly don't have to, and I don't do it every day. It's a big difference than when I realize this is the way that he feels love from me. It's like like him saying to me, I'm not going to talk to you this week. I'm just not going to talk. You know, and that would crush me. I mean, that would be the number one way I feel that we connect. So for me, it's learning and understanding that it's so much more than this for your husband.
Yeah, so let me read a little bit out of this book here. And this is out of For Women Only and For Men Only. 97% of men said getting enough sex wasn't by itself enough. They wanted to feel genuinely wanted. Men are powerfully driven by the emotional need to feel desired by their wives. And we filter everything through that grid. Do I feel desired or not desired by my wife? If we feel our wives truly want us sexually, we feel confident, powerful, alive, and loved. If we don't, we feel depressed, angry, and alone. And this goes way beyond the amount of sex we're having.
This was a huge mind shift for me. And I wonder, there might be some other woman here that this is the takeaway, that literally it's an emotional need. And it changes everything when you realize that. And I want to be clear that it's not just show-up sex. It's meaningful sex. It's, I want to be here with you. It's not, I'm thinking about the grocery, and I'm not really in it, and when's it going to be over? And I know that there's a time for that. What? There's a time for the quickie, but really, this is more than that. This is, I'm in it. I'm bringing all my attention and my desire and my passion for you. It's making a conscious effort to really be there for your husband. And on the flip side, I want to talk about this. When you reject your husband, when you say no, it can be. It says, it was talking about that in the book, it can be devastating. It can lead to depression. It really is a huge deal because it's saying, an you know, what the message they receive is, you don't want me. I'm not important. And I know, I mean, let me be clear. I know there are plenty of times that we have to say no. But I want to caution you when you have to say no, when it's not the right time or it's been a hard day, to say it tenderly, like really to think about your husband and say it in a loving, cautious way, and let them know you're not rejecting them. Maybe you're saying no to sex right now, but you're not rejecting them and you still desire them and you still love them. And I've learned a little tip is to say, maybe not now, but can we make that a priority soon? You know, like maybe let's try tomorrow when I'm rested, or could we plan on that for sure this weekend? A no but is a lot easier to take and easier to swallow for men if there's that, I still know that you're important. So kind of to sum it up, I think making love is not just physical. It's a way to speak to a man's heart.
So spinning off of that, next slide there, figure out your wife's wheelhouse. So I played baseball growing up, so I love this. So do we have any baseball fans in the room, hopefully? Okay, so the wheelhouse is if I'm hitting and the pitcher throws a ball in my wheelhouse, it's like I don't even have to hit the ball. I just swing, okay? And I know I'm going to hit it hard. I mean, it's the perfect pitch at the perfect spot, and I'm going to hit it hard, okay? So you've got to figure out your wife's wheelhouse. What's the perfect time or the perfect stage that needs to be set to get her in the mood where she can, you know, have, you know, so she can be present and it's, you know, desired sex. You know, men most commonly are 24/7, 365. I'm 39, so 24 or 22/6 and 350 or something. Women, not so much. You've heard, you know, the saying that men are microwaves, women are crockpots, and that's true. But you know, men need to be the most flexible of, you know, when we can, you know, when those opportunities come, and so. Maybe that means trying, you know, talking about it. Like, is there something you can take off of your wife's plate? Are there things that you can do for her that will help her get in the mood?
Yeah, there's that saying that foreplay begins in the kitchen. I mean, it really does. It's when you can help me free up some space. It really, it's a give and take. It's you're being there for me to help me get to that place where I can be there for you.
So, you know, I'll give you an example that works for us. So date night, right? We plan a date night on a Friday night, and we set up babysitting, and so I get home from work, and we go drop the kids off either at grandma's house or, you know, babysitter's house, and then we head out to dinner. And my mind is what's going to happen after dinner. Let's eat. Let's get back home and get busy. So about halfway through dinner, and I'm going to need to get some support on this one, but about halfway through dinner, I see the yawn. Does everybody know, do all the guys know what the yawn is? I won't make you raise your hand. Here's what the yawn means. The yawn means that the door is closing. The yawn means get the check, get in the truck, break the speed limit, and get home. So what we figured out is this. So what works for us is we drop the kids off at babysitting or grandma's house. We go back home, you know, and we have our physical intimacy before date night. That way I'm nice and relaxed at dinner. There's no pressure. You know, yawn all you want. That's less talking for me if she starts yawning. So. All right, we're good.
Yeah, so finding out your wife's wheelhouse is important.
Figure out the wheelhouse.
It's those small little things that, like, it's good to laugh about and learn, but it really is. It makes all the difference in these little ways that we can make it better. And my final point for the women is just to make this a priority. Make wanting sex to be a good thing in your marriage, make it a priority. We found a quote Billy Graham said, sex is the most wonderful thing on earth when God is in it. But when the devil is in it, it's the worst thing in the world. And I think it's something that God has given us, this wonderful gift in marriage that we've totally messed up, that Satan has really messed up for us. Satan would love for us to have sex before marriage, but not during marriage or outside of marriage or through pornography. But he doesn't want us to have a good, healthy sex life. That really is what God intended for us. And it can easily get off track. So I just want to encourage us to really put an emphasis on it, because it's an important part. And I like to think of it like there's a maintenance light on in your car. It's signaling you that maybe something else is going on. So if sex isn't going great for you, maybe it's this emotional intimacy that's not really working. Maybe there's other things that could be talked about, and let it kind of be that signal that, hey, this is something we want to talk about. And Dr. Eggerich in Love and Respect said, if there ever were an issue that really isn't the issue, it's sex. So it really is one of those that it can indicate there's other things that you want to work on in your marriage. So I would say commit to working on it. Talk about this with your husband. Ask for what you need. Talk about what you need. Read Christian books on the topic. We think that's been a huge way to start talking about something that at first is a little bit uncomfortable. Going to these seminars that Harpeth puts on, or if you really are stuck, and we recognize that this can be a place that you can really be stuck. There can be past wounds around this area. There can be hurts that really make sex a really bad thing in your marriage because of the pain from the past. And if you're in that place, I'd encourage you, get marriage counseling. Go to a good Christian marriage counselor to help you on this issue. And for the women, I would say make this a something you want to work on right now. Say maybe for you it means just kind of mentally getting there, like thinking about it and each day mentally preparing for it. Because for women, it does. It is something more in our mind. It's really, desire starts with us wanting to have the desire. And Bobby mentioned the crock pots. I say, plug it in the morning. Like, start thinking about it. One of our MOPS mentors said something that was so huge. She, from the stage, she said, pray about that you will have the desire for later on. She sometimes spends some time in the morning praying that she will actually desire this for her husband, because it's not always something that we naturally have. So I'd encourage you, start with a, you know, flirting text, or put it on your mental calendar of, I'm going to make this happen and I'm going to initiate it. But I encourage you, think back to the last time that you did have good sex. And it, for some, it maybe was recent, and some it's been a while. But when that time when you both were in it and you desired it, after that experience, you and your husband are so close. I mean, you feel when God is in it that it can be a really bonding experience. And I actually learned through counseling something I never had heard about, but there is actually a hormone called oxytocin that is submitted very few times in our life, but one of the times is after we have good sex. And so it's actually called the cuddle hormone, but it's a way that makes you close. It makes you feel closer, and I love that God created that in us, like a design to make you actually feel closer to your spouse. So our belief is that sex is designed by God for us in our marriage, and we want you to have that as well.
Can you overdose on oxytocin?
You can't overdose, but I think it's a good thing. I think the world would be a happier place with it.
Yeah.
So I think we just want to go to the last side and just kind of summarize
our takeaway. Quick summary. man, you know, if you've got some emotional armor, figure it out. You know, try to work through that. Learn your wife, make her your girlfriend, and, you know, figure out your wife's wheelhouse.
And for women, I think making it a safe place, or for all of us, and honestly, when I was saying that, I was thinking even for our kids, like make it a safe place for your kids to talk about things. That will create intimacy in your family. Two, sex is not just physical. And third, I would encourage you to make this a priority in your marriage.
All right, next slide. What do we got here? All right, resources. So let me say this. This book changed my life. It changed our marriage. If you don't have it, get it. You know, wives, read a chapter, discuss it with your husband. Husbands, read a chapter, discuss it with your wife. Read it to each other. It's great resources. We have marriage mentors. We have, I think Jason's going to speak on that in a little bit. But we got the marriage mentor program here at Harpeth. If you're in a place, if you've been married a year, 5 years, 10 years, and you need that, get that. Surround yourself with healthy couples. And, you know, if you need it, you know, seek out counseling. You know, before I was in counseling, even though I was married to a counselor, which I was in counseling pretty much 24/7. I've never thought about that. It's funny. Before I was in counseling, you know, counseling was for weak people. Counseling was for people that, you know, had issues. And since I didn't have any issues, I didn't need counseling. everybody needs counseling at some point in their lives. So if you need it, seek it out. You know, for me, there was a lot of shame around that, but I've learned that everybody needs counseling. So next slide. Thank you.
Isn't that great? Thank you so much, you guys. I just have a couple of quick questions for you, and then Jason's going to come up, and we have a little exercise or discussion that we'd like you guys to do. Bobby, the one thing I wanted to ask you about, if you can tell everybody what you've shared with me about at work when you're with men at work, like that time you were out, I think, in Oregon, and you had all the men pull out their cell phones.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about this.
So I'm in design and construction. We build hospitals. So we're sitting at it, or we're out in Oregon somewhere and designing this hospital. We're in this room and full of guys, and you know, a lot of guys that are you know, a few years younger than me, a bunch of engineers. And so about 5 minutes into this design meeting, I'm all about, man, how's your marriage? You checking in? You know, you emotionally available? Are you talking? And they're like, what? What are you talking about? You know? And so we you know, I'm talking through this, and I'm like, hey, do you want more or better or more and better sex? Yeah, everybody wanted to sign up for that. So I told them, you know, trying to coach them through this, I said, hey, look, just pull out your cell phones and type this. Hey, babe, thinking about you, miss you, love you, you know, see you in a couple of days. Because we're out there and just making sure that they're checking in and just trying to pour into those guys and make them better.
Yeah, you said they'll thank you.
Yeah,
later.
They'll thank me when they get home.
But that's funny because I forgot about that story. But whatever Bobby's into, you'll know. If you've spent any time, Josh, you know, you've been to lunch with Bobby several times. He's just going to tell you all about it. So right now, in the past few years, he's just been really excited about marriages. So I'm sure there's a lot of engineers and architects that are having to talk about all of this.
I think it's great. I think what it gets to the heart of that Bobby and Tress have been talking about is something that is not talked about a lot in our culture today, how men and women are different, because it's considered sort of politically incorrect to do that in certain circles. But God, in His Word, of course, teaches us that men and women are different like this, and what they're saying are some great tools for that. Tressa, I have a question for you. Let's say that I'm here, or maybe I'm listening to this, and the truth is, what you're talking about is not happening in my marriage. There's a communication breakdown. Maybe there's not very much intimacy. What's the first step? What would you recommend if there's any of those couples listening or here today?
I think the best step is, if they are listening, I think to start the conversation, say, you know, I heard this, can we talk a little bit about it? To me, it's just the first step. I think the books for us were a non-threatening way to say, could we read this and talk together? Like, I think we could have more, you know, and I would want to encourage them that's pretty common, actually, at some point in marriages that you get off track and that you don't have that. I also know that there's some couples that have never experienced it, and I'd hope that even a little bit of our story might encourage them that we didn't know at all and we didn't have this, but it's something that I think everybody can have. It just takes some work, but I think the first step is just starting a conversation.
Starting a conversation, good. Well, thank you so much. I want to ask Jason Henderson if you'll come up and talk a little bit about what we want to do next. And I also want to add my voice and encourage everybody to read the books For Men Only, For Women Only by Sean T. Feldhahn. They've sold millions of copies, and one of the reasons why they've sold millions of copies is because they're so effective in helping men and women to understand one another. Jason?
All right, thanks. We're going to do a little exercise. I know everybody's probably, there's some piece of this that for you sticks out and you're ready to talk about it. We want to make it safe, though. We'd like everybody to stand up. And we're going to have the men, if you will go to my left, your right, and the women do the opposite. And we're going to go and we're going to ask you guys first to separate into men and women. When you feel like that has happened and you don't see any of the opposite sex around you, see if you can separate into, this is not scientific, groups of about 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. It'd be great if you see people that you don't know that are kind of hanging out going, I don't know what group to be in, if you just grab them. I know we've got our small groups here, so maybe you guys divide and pull extra people in that you haven't met, you don't know. But what we want to end up with is 5-6 men, 5-6 women, and just find a spot in the room. Tressa and Bobby have designed some questions. They're going to hand some cards to you guys that have some discussion questions. So go ahead, and I'll tell you more in a minute. Okay, the men have accomplished the task. Ladies, do you have your groups? Will you if you just find a place to settle? Okay, so Bobby and Tressa have passed out cards. Everybody find a spot? So Bobby and Tressa have passed out cards. And men, you like searched and destroyed the first mission of finding groups and sitting down. The idea for these questions is not the same. You're not looking for a correct answer for each question. What we want to do is just use them as thought starters. So everybody doesn't have to answer the question. There isn't a right answer. You could talk about the question. What does this question make you think? What other thoughts or what other questions might this question evoke? And so the important thing is to just start some conversation. Talk about what you heard tonight that stuck out to you. And everybody take these cards home tonight, and I encourage you to talk about what you talked about in your groups, if appropriate, with your spouse. And then I'll come back up in about 15 minutes and close this out. So you got about 10, 15 minutes to discuss. Okay, I'm going to draw this to a close. If you guys, if I can get your attention. Did you guys have some good discussion? Was this good? Yes? Good discussion? I know the ladies had good discussion. They were giggling and laughing, and I could hear them going before you guys got going. Hey, if I could have your attention, can we give a round of applause for Bobby and Tressa? That was really gutsy. That was courageous what they did tonight. Thanks to Cody for running the sound for us tonight. Appreciate that. And I want to thank everybody for coming. Alex and I were just talking. We had a great turnout tonight. I really appreciate you guys coming. This was probably not the least, but probably one of the lesser promoted marriage ministry events or things that we've done. And the fact that you guys are here, I guess we're thinking maybe we've struck a chord. This is a cool type of thing that maybe we need to do more of. So we'll take that to heart. So I appreciate you guys being here. So Alex and I, in case you weren't here when we were introduced before, Alex is in the back. Can you wave? Alex and I together are your... Yeah, round of applause for Alex. Alex and I are your marriage ministry deacons. And we like to say that all that means is we want to do whatever we can to provide you guys the tools that it takes to help you trust and follow Jesus in your marriage. And we have a lot of those tools available. I kind of thought today, and I think Josh nailed it this morning, when he said that he needs God and he needs the church, and he said that those truths were there even when everything seemed to be going right. And, you know, those truths were there in the good times. And so I just want to encourage everybody, even if you would say today that your marriage is going just fine, you still need God in it, and you still need the church involved in it. And one of the primary ways that we do that here at Harpeth is through marriage mentoring. And all that means, it's actually really simple. All that means is a more experienced couple walks alongside a less experienced couple for a season of time. And there's two big misconceptions about marriage mentoring. Bobby made a point this evening. He said, you're either growing closer to each other or you're growing away from each other. Nobody that steps up today and says, I'm relatively happy in marriage, that's a snapshot in time. Nobody's staying stagnant in that snapshot in time. And the only way that you can continue to grow closer together is by actively investing in your marriage. And so even if you would say, I have a relatively happy marriage, I would highly recommend marriage mentoring. It means a more experienced couple is going to meet with you. They're going to share what they've learned walking a little bit further down the road that you have to travel than you already have. We have actually now, we've hit this great tipping point, I think. We've got three or four couples that have raised their hand in the church, very wisely said, you know, everything's going great, but we've seen the Shantee, we've seen the Parrots. You guys are doing some quality things with the marriage ministry, and we want to see what else there is. And they've said, can we have marriage mentors? And, you know, we asked them, you know, we the first thing we do, there's a little questionnaire we give you just to see where you're at. And they say, we just want to keep our marriage going well. It seems to be going well. We want to keep our marriage growing well. So the first big misconception is that you have to be in a crisis or something needs to be going wrong for you to need marriage mentoring. That just isn't true. The other thing is, if you would say that your marriage is relatively happy and you like laughing and learning with other Christians here at Harpeth, you might be a perfect candidate to be a marriage mentor. And the other misconception about marriage mentoring is that to become a marriage mentor, you need to be an expert on something. You need to have a credential. That's not the case. You just have to have lived through marriage a few years longer than somebody else and be willing to share that wisdom. And it sounds like, well, you know, I already have a ministry. I already have a job. I lead a small group. You probably can do marriage mentoring right where you're at. There's probably younger couples in your circles today that you can be sharing your marriage experience with. We don't, you know, deputize you and make you, you know, sign up on an agenda. And it can be very easy. And in fact, some of our most active mentors were folks that reached out to Alex or I and said, hey, we're meeting with this couple already. And, you know, do they need a mentor? What needs to happen? And we actually let them walk through the Marriage Mentor. There's an online little Marriage Mentor Academy. It's actually a fun date night with your spouse. We let them walk through that so they can be speaking from the same script as all the other mentors. And now they're mentors. And I'll just say, you know, the Reeves are a couple that every time I turn around, they're like, we're walking with yet another couple, and they are doing great marriage mentoring work here. I'm really proud that they're a part of the marriage mentor team. And there's also a huge boomerang effect that happens. So if you want to actively invest in your marriage and you don't know where to start, but you could be a marriage mentor, and the parents actually say there's this boomerang effect that happens of blessing. When you start helping others with their marriage, your marriage just gets helped by being a part of that. So enough from me. If you want next steps, if you want to be a mentor, if you want to be mentored, if you would like to know what a love language is, I know we threw that word out tonight, and what your love language is, and many other tools, we actually have what is the start of a really good marriage library. I would recommend you find Alex or I. The easiest way to do that is to go to the Harpeth website. That's harpethcc.com. There's a marriage link. All the contact information is on there, and we'll get you set up with whatever it is you need. So thanks again for being here. Let me pray and I'll dismiss us. Father, thank you so much for courageous Christians who are willing to realize that you don't have to be an expert to share something that you've learned. And thank you for Christians that come and want to invest in marriage and are a safe audience to hear your word. God, we love you, and just in the mission of the marriage ministry, I pray that you would give all of us a fire to trust and follow you in our marriages, and in your example, disciple others to trust and follow you in their marriages. God, we pray this in your name. Amen.